and the Bulldog.
Uh-oh. Guess what day it is? Guess what day it is? Huh? Anybody?
Monday, Tuesday, hump day is halfway.
It's Mike Shope.
Mike. What day is it, Mike?
And the Bulldog.
Hey, guess what day it is? Oh, come on. I know you can hear me.
It's Mike Shope and the Bulldog.
Guess what today is?
It's hump day.
Woo-hoo!
On WGR.
Hump day!
Sports Radio 550. Gonna be there in an hour.
Coming in the band. The streak is still intact. I watched about half of this last game.
All right.
Portugal and DR Congo. That's how they want it.
That's how it should be. Seeing it, the final strains of extra time, I would have given myself the credit you've been giving yourself. I've seen some of every game. That was the only part of this match that I actually saw was the last 3 minutes of added time. But that would count.
You've seen parts of every other game?
No. You said that yesterday, so you're saying... Yes. I'm saying if I had a... I don't have a streak. I missed a lot on the weekend.
Okay.
But if I had one, today would be a check. I saw some of it.
That's right.
So
you did.
Yeah.
But count it.
I don't have a streak. No, I'm way behind.
Last night, midnight, I saw Austria score. I was up late enough to see them score.
You sticking with it.
Against Jordan.
I didn't even make it to Messi's hat trick last night.
Really?
The two goals, I'm like, yeah, whatever. They were fine here.
That guy.
Yeah.
Could have been four pretty easily. But.
Pretty good if you – I saw a reference. I never saw a bet slip. But I like my Tage Thompson hat trick bet. Like if you went in hard on, you could have done hat trick with Messi, but you've got the three of the biggest stars in the world playing yesterday in separate matches, three in a row.
Haaland,
Mbappe.
Mbappe first.
And Messi. And if you went two goals for all of them, man, you would have been in great shape. all three of them had two. I mean, Messi ended up with three.
You can do that?
Yeah, I think. I saw Sam Monson tweet, congratulations to the guy that had that and won $18,000. But I don't know if he was just kidding or if he knew of someone who placed that bet.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have a way to go back and look at what those odds would have been. But it's probably pretty fat. So, anyway.
Yeah, Mbappe's second was late. Haaland and Messi were not that late, so not as much
drama.
Of a sweat.
Right.
But Mbappe was the first game, so you needed that late goal that you hated because you were rooting against France.
Right. That was, I had
it. How do you score from there, I think you might have said, off the air when he scored his last goal?
I don't think I said it. How do you score from there? I said that was from way out.
Okay, that's right.
it was. It was from far out, yeah.
My friend's text thread last night was, is Messi the best player ever in any sport?
Yeah.
Any sport?
Yeah. Well, I mean...
Can you really say that? You think?
The fact that he's performing... You watched it, I didn't. But everything online I'm seeing about this Portugal-DR Congo match is, hey, Portugal, if you sit your legend down, maybe you could win the World Cup. But you're going to continue to trot him out there, and he's killing you, and you're not going
to
be a contender if you
That's
keep
hard
doing
to do.
It. Yeah. And like they're at the same – first World Cup for him, for Ronaldo, was the same year as Messi. And he's still – I mean, he's tied for the all-time lead now in World Cup goals. He's the all-time Argentinian leader with that, obviously. And he also is – the youngest Argentinian to ever score in the World Cup and now the oldest Argentinian to ever score in the World Cup. Like, that is... And 20 years to the day was his debut in the World Cup from last night. That doesn't in and of itself make him the greatest all-time in any sport. But, I mean, the fact that he's still performing at that level and Ronaldo's like a ghost
says a lot. I can't say that's true from watching this game, but... That's true?
Yeah.
Ronaldo?
Well,
Ronaldo's older.
That's just what online is, that I'm seeing. You know, it could be fans just, really, really mad.
He's 41. Messi is not
that
30, old.
He's 39, I think. So, yeah, there's a couple of big years.
Well, Wouldn't we know it? Could he be the best player to play anything? I mean, is that particular statistic, being the youngest and the oldest to do a thing, not pretty insane? I mean, is that, that's sort of on the Gretzky level.
Yeah.
Where Gretzky showed up as a teenager.
Yeah.
And was maybe the best player in the league immediately and then played forever. He wasn't the best player in the league when he retired.
No.
Messi's probably not the best player in the world now.
No, because he's not even in the best league in the world anymore. And so he's dominating, you know, what is MLS? Like a fifth tier? Like, the European leagues, I think, blow it away. So
A few do, maybe.
You know, England, Spain, Italy, Germany, France. I would say. Maybe that's it.
France,
sure. So I said fifth, so maybe that's it. Whatever. So that matters. The fact that he's not at the top tier anymore tells you. Like, I think because if he were still capable of dominating or even being a really effective player at that level, he'd probably be there.
This is like yesterday when I said people should just ask us soccer questions and we'll tell them, we'll give them our answers.
We'll do the best we can with them.
We don't know where this league ranks. We don't know where he ranks. We don't know how old anybody, well, you did, how old Messi is,
I believe,
et cetera.
I believe I'm right about that. But
you'd think if someone is watching every game, they might pick up on some of this, but yes. I have yet to do that successfully. Anyway, today, Jeremy Kahn on the Ravens and the AFC, and then Sal Capaccio at 5 today. Sal's latest is about the Bills' secondary, which is, I mean, it's defense, but one of the more interesting topics, units on the roster, I think. It's different. It's going to be different with new safeties and just like, obviously, a new coordinator. I have to figure out what, and you've been sort of pushing at this with the Bills' defense. I have to figure out what it means to me. Whether they're, if they're down or just, like, there's a transition period ahead. I have to decide what I'm going to do with that. I haven't yet figured out if I need to do anything with that. Because really, last year their defense was, what's fair? Just okay?
Yeah.
Pretty good?
Yeah, I think just okay.
And what did it mean?
It ended kind of the same way it always ends.
It did.
And
they won their 12 games.
Yep.
Then they won a playoff game. This is the same as ever. This is what's happened 5-6 years in a row. And then they went to Denver, in this case, and lost and gave up 33 points. But still, like, the Bills had the ball, the whole every conversation
and
we have every
and
year.
And the pile of turnovers that the offense,
right.
I mean, it was the most, I think, the easiest game they've had in the playoffs to say, like, the defense did not cost them the game, even though they gave up the points. I mean, the turnovers, there's a field goal and a touchdown that are right off of, you know, just here you go. Here's the ball at our 20. Can you get points out of this? And Denver did both times. I mean, that's huge. So, you know, those are going to happen. But, yeah, I mean, last year their defense being what it was, you know, as much as I'm sort of, you know, bracing for, well, we don't have our guys, and another draft cycle or whatever, it might be that if their defense is, you know, middle of the pack or worse even than it was last year, that tactically, maybe that will push them to do something different on offense, and maybe that'll be good for them. Like, maybe that'll come out in the wash as a net gain.
Well, I know that's true in fantasy.
So
we want the teams whose defenses are terrible.
Right,
we want Cincinnati and Dallas
because you have potent, explosive offenses that have to perform in order for the team to have a chance.
Right, that has not been these Bills.
No,
they haven't ever had to really race. They've been good enough on defense, if not very good.
Right.
At times they were that, where they didn't really have to race. And therefore, well, that's interesting, even if you dig deeper here, to think about, because you've had 2 years in a row, even one last year where their defense wasn't great, but they had the league rushing leader. And the year before, Cook broke the franchise record in touchdowns, tied or won the league title in that category. And so you have a situation here where they've been able to relieve some of the pressure, if you want to put it that way, on Allen. And maybe this year could be different in that way.
Yep.
And what if it is? Are they going to be equipped to race teams if they can't stop anybody? I mean, that's pretty dramatic. But will they be able to do that? Will they be willing to do that? Will they have to get pushed into that?
Yeah.
We want the Bills. You know, all the wide receiver stuff over the years, and this isn't to speak for everybody, but we want the Bills to lean into their strengths. And how is Allen not your strength? So get them weapons, you know, sort of just push into that.
Yeah.
And then you end up pretty much, generally speaking, playing a certain way where, you know, you might not want to be, I'm not saying you don't want to be explosive. And even that word, by the way, is problematic because last year the Bills were, I think, fourth in explosive plays.
It's like 15 or 20 yard plays. I forget where the mark is.
Yeah.
It might be 15 yards, but yeah,
they were fourth.
One of the highest percentages in the league of drives containing an explosive play.
So I don't know. We all kind of want, again, here I am sounding like I'm speaking for everyone. I'm not, but want to see the Bills be more what? Up-tempo, pass first, these kinds of things. It served them pretty well to have pulled back on that, and their defense has been good enough that they can afford it. And that's the point, that this year maybe they won't be. Maybe this year will be one where they have to be able to score fast, and that would mean more stats for Allen, if not more wins overall. That'll be interesting. Sal's got a piece up on the secondary, and we'll talk to him about it later. 803-0550 is our number if you want in on this. Like, what is the Bills' defense? I mean, one thing we've talked about is there are five, maybe, players that were not retained, that went to free agency, and some of them, not all of them anymore, Epinesa,
right,
maybe signed, but some of them have not signed anywhere. And that's an interesting little puzzle. Like, well,
yep. Most of them have not signed anywhere.
Right. Yep. Bosa, Trey White, Milano.
Right.
How about that? Like, is Milano so damaged physically
that I don't know.
He's not on anybody's radar?
Yeah, or is he just, you know what, the price I'm paying physically isn't worth it anymore. I've banked a bunch of dough. You know, life can be pretty good from here on out. I mean, you get a startup going, or who knows? Like, he could just be on to another phase of his life, for all we know. Guys are afforded that ability at a higher rate than ever because of the money that's available earlier in their careers. You could just say, you know, a lot of guys have done it. I mean, it's usually for health reasons, but I think guys are more willing to say, I'm getting out now because I want, you know, I don't want a fifth or sixth concussion. I want to be with my kids when I'm 35 years old. So I don't know what Milano's situation is. And I don't need to single him out necessarily from this group. All those guys have made a ton of money. But yeah, there's a lot of, there were a lot of guys that have been left by the side of the road, and new faces and new places. Like, I last time, I'm excited to talk to Sal again. I always am. The last time we visited with him, we were talking about Igbenesin at corner, and, you know, he's just a different style player, different body type. And I know you're not supposed to leap to conclusions about any of that being a judgment on Maxwell Hairston, but this is sort of what I'm talking about. I invested a first round pick last year in a corner, and it's possible, at least, that they don't view him as fitting ideally what Leonard wants to do, and thus they draft this kid in the second round out of Ohio State to, you know, try to get, you know, yeah, we need another guy. Okay, I know the numbers thing, but I don't know. I mean, I'm sort of bracing for that to be a battle, at least, and I don't know. We'll see. I mean, Hairston just did not play a lot of football. I don't know what their view of him would be. I know what they'll say, because he's a former first-round pick who had injuries. Like, he's got every chance. But I don't know, man. I sort of feel like they drafted IGB to come in over the top of him already.
Yeah, maybe. What we end up talking about the most when these playoff losses happen is the Bills' inability to get the quarterback to the ground. That's been the biggest talking point about their defense and their playoff losses for how many years? Six? 2020
Yep.
Was when they went into the draft the next year and drafted, right, Rousseau? And
after the 2020 championship after 2020. Game, so the 21 draft.
Right. Yes. Right. So that is six seasons ago, that game, that first AFC championship yep. loss to Kansas City. And really, regular season, they get by. But when it's come down to it, they have failed at that. And I always have a tough time with that because, for one thing, it's like one game. And for another, I know I said this enough times, Patrick Mahomes, well, I mean, it's not easy to get him. Not everybody does it
right.
to get him down. So that's what a lot of the premise is when it comes to drafting receivers and offense is like, well, you only have so much control over this.
Yeah, but you see the teams that do beat him are the ones that get there. You know, right? I mean, Philly in the Super Bowl, maybe quintessentially. Like, they were all over him. And that was it. I mean, it's a high bar. I mean, again, they were dominant. And so, you know, to have a chance usually against him, at least in the playoffs, it seems like you got to get him on the ground.
Well, I mean, the offseason, it's pretty much all set. I mean, there's still, like these ex-Bills, there's still some signings left to happen. But because we have Bradley Chubb now, are the Bills in a position where you can expect that to work out? I don't. I mean,
no. I don't.
Probably not that different.
I feel like Bradley Chubb was more of exactly what they've been doing, which is like, here's a guy that's pretty good, and we can afford him, and maybe we catch. You know, maybe he has some career. I don't. It feels like they've never been able to find their way to the Max Crosby trade. Or the Myles Garrett trade, or the Trey Hendrickson trade, any of the big pass rushers that are available or even rumored to be available, they never get there. And so it's Bradley Chubb, and it's a first-round pick on Parker, who on paper reads very much like Bradley Chubb, which maybe that'll work. Maybe because they're both here, they'll get somewhere there. But I don't know. I don't feel like the personnel tells me they're going to be better at that. That's where maybe the scheme comes into play. Like, am I going to have more free guys? Am I going to confuse people maybe in a way that McDermott's defense was maybe too static and easier to decipher? At least from the pass rush standpoint, I think they did a good job in the secondary and with their linebackers of always kind of confusing and giving different looks and all that kind of stuff. A lot has been written and said about McDermott's defense's ability to do that, but they were never great at getting to the passer. So maybe Leonard can scheme that into existence. I mean, I don't know. It might be a lot to ask.
Do we want him to wait until January to do stuff? Like last year with Bosa? Right. You know what? Not entirely kidding. Can you just wait to play him until January? Because right. You're probably in the playoffs, and they always were. And then, you know, he didn't break down, I guess.
He didn't break down, but he stopped being effective.
Yeah,
and
that's almost worse.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's like the Ronaldo conversation we were just having. Like, could I have had a better guy there? Maybe, I don't know. It just didn't. And he was very close to being the goat of the whole thing, because there were two penalties on a late play that got Denver to the win. Or was that the tying? Whatever it was, he took a roughing the passer penalty very late that got undone by a Taron Johnson interference call, and that it would have cost the Bills all the same and been a really, really bad way to lose.
Well, they went, if I remember right, Denver went ahead late, and then the Bills tied it.
Okay, then
before overtime.
I think it was that. I don't think it was on the last drive. I think it was on that
there was
drive.
A Mims touchdown.
Yeah.
Doug Farrar had some clips of Bo Nix throwing passes in that game against the Bills. It's just annoying that it's not – this goes both ways. This cuts both ways. It's annoying that it isn't Kansas City or even Baltimore mm-hmm. or Cincinnati, where now there's another team. This could have been New England. It wasn't. It's Denver, where you can't say all the same things like we say about losing to Mahomes. Well, what can you do?
Right.
I mean, they don't want to make those excuses, but at some point you're like, well, he's great, and what I want to do here is difficult against him. I have to outscore him, this kind of stuff. You wouldn't have said that about Denver, you know, that you have to beat right. Denver in a shootout to beat Denver in the playoffs. But that's what it was. I mean, 33-30, right? So it's a little bit, it's different that there's another team. And again, you can have the Patriots too. The Bills have not lost a postseason game to Baltimore, but they have to Kansas City, they have to Cincinnati, they have now to Denver, and maybe we have the Chargers or the Jaguars or the Patriots, yep. You know, that are still, they're certainly contenders, and maybe someone else too.
The penalties I was referring to were in overtime. The Taron Johnson, okay. Bosa play where they led to the winning field goal.
Do I need to rewatch that game? Is that what you're telling me? Do I need to rewatch Bills Broncos?
I don't recommend that as your friend or as your coworker.
It was always uphill. That's how I think of that game. Is it was you were always climbing uphill. End of the first half, mistakes and points.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And
early in the third quarter, it was the same thing. There was an early turnover in the third quarter.
But they do take the lead.
Yes, they do.
Kincaid. There's a Coleman. There's Mecole Hardman is in the end zone in this game for the Bills, by the way, I think early. But, yeah, that game. It happens so fast.
Yeah,
lose, and then McDermott, and that's what we're doing.
Hardman scored their first touchdown of the game.
They lose. There's a coaching change, like on what, on Monday?
Yeah.
And that's what we're doing. And maybe that's fine that we're not, that we never did.
Dwelling
sort
on
of
the game.
Like,
right.
What actually happened that day?
Right.
I don't think I spent much time talking about like details from the Denver game. Is Bo Nix good? I hate to give you such a brain buster so early in the day, but is he good? Bo Nix? I was in a draft bulldog. Do you know that?
Of course I knew that. I just assume it all the time.
Yeah, that's probably, I deserve that. For better or worse. I was in a draft, and he was not picked. Bo Nix was not picked at all. This but is a...
It's a certain kind of commentary.
Kind of. And he runs.
Yeah.
This is a draft, a league where you make changes, too. This is not a best ball where you can't... He right. always would get picked in a best ball draft because you can't do anything about your roster.
Yeah.
But
I don't know if he's good. He's effective. That's not the same, but it worked well enough. I mean, they were maybe him getting hurt from going to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, right, probably.
Right? I mean, it was a close game in the snow at home against New England with Jarrett Stidham playing.
Yeah. I would assume yes.
Yeah, right? Yeah,
I mean, they made one – Stidham made one terrible play that cost them eventually a touchdown. And what was the game, 10-7? So. Playoff – memories. The number here, 803-0550. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog. Jeremy Kahn, Sal Capaccio ahead. Brian Koziol, too. Let's not leave Brian out.
I've done all my work.
I love this day.
I have a tweet loaded already.
You do?
Yes. With the
already?
I did.
Picks are in.
I did my work. I'm not sharing. I still reserve the right. Brooks Koepka's got a hand injury. He left the Canadian Open last week with an injury, but he's going to play. That was like my pick to win the whole thing. And I found out today he's got a hand injury. I don't know.
Is that bad for a golfer?
It seems like it should
be. A hand injury.
Could be impactful.
What kind of hand injury?
No.
What?
I read a quote that said it feels like you've hit your funny bone, but like all the time.
I got to think about that.
So that doesn't seem good. That seems like it could be numbness.
I love this day. We have the picks. Bulldogs up in the pick 10. Brian will be on at 6 Eastern. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog here. We'll look for your calls next. This is WGR.
I think as this defense now has a completely different scheme with Jim Leonard taking over, and I think stylistically they're going to be really different in terms of five-man fronts and blitz heavy and lots of man coverage. Then an offense that, thinking about Joe Brady and Pete Carmichael and Sean Payton disciples that they are, and Sean Payton is a very pass-aggressive coach, and he's been either a head coach or a offensive coordinator for 21 years in the NFL. In 11 of those seasons, he was top five in pass attempts. So I think they're going to pass more. I think they're going to be more aggressive on defense. I think it's going to have a different look and feel, and I think they're going to try to win games differently.
Morning show guest Joe Marino. G.I. Joe. He's theirs. We never talk to Joe anymore. I don't.
No, it's
he's
not.
A morning guy, apparently. Yeah, yeah. He's our morning shows guy, one of them. Grand Island, born in, or when he was born, he lived on Grand Island.
All right.
Just like myself.
Except he left, and you're still there.
I know. Well, I mean, you could say that.
I did.
I love the island.
Well, it's not the love.
I got defensive
there. You're living on an island.
I mean, I thought about,
it's not the love.
I thought about calling you today and suggesting we do this show from my house because it was so freaking hot in here yesterday. Right. It was a perfect day to sit on that deck.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that would have taken a lot. There was really no occasion for it.
Yeah.
We have the dog barking and causing trouble. I mean, there was really no particular reason. Just tough it out. Just tough.
Yeah.
Toughen up.
Well, it turns out the situation's been addressed successfully.
It's beautiful in here today.
I reached out this morning, and was told it was 102 degrees in here. I don't know if that was actually.
Who said that? Jeremy?
Yeah. I said Jeremy. I texted. I loaded it. I texted him at like 9 o'clock and said, "Is it still 110 degrees in there?" And he texted back 102. Which I just took to mean it's still hot.
You have the thermometer right there.
I didn't even realize.
I didn't know that we had that in here. Joe was talking to me last night about how it was in the 80s.
Yeah. Okay.
And I would have guessed that.
Yeah.
When we were here. We were both sweating.
Right.
But today, beautiful. What, like I'm looking out at the ocean or something. It's comfortable.
Yes.
Comfortable is the word.
Yes.
It's not beautiful. It's comfortable.
I'm very comfortable.
Yes. And I love this day, the golf bets. Ian McMillan is a account I follow, I think Sports Illustrated, 2 days in a row for Sports Illustrated on the show. And I am tailing him on two golf bets.
All right.
This isn't working out for me so well with Sam. Texas is out.
Yeah, it was a tough one last night. Yep.
But he likes two things. He likes no hole in one, which I couldn't find. I could only find like per round. I stopped looking. But he says Shinnecock, a.k.a. New York Golf Course, in the spirit of the World Cup, that he predicts whoever wins will not be a first-time major winner, minus 142.
Okay.
The difficulty of the golf course,
right.
The strain of the Open. I mean, I can think, and so can you, of plenty of U.S. Opens where it was a first-time. Michael Campbell and Martin Keimer and these guys that had never won majors before.
Spawn last year.
J.J. Spawn, exactly. But I'm betting against it at minus odds because Ian is. I don't know him.
Okay.
That's enough for me. I'm just, I know what I don't know. Yep. And he is betting, and so am I now, plus 1,200 that the course record will be broken.
Ooh, I like that.
Do you?
That's fun. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
It'll be a fun thing to follow.
What is the course record?
So I'm not positive of this, but the last time the Open was at Shinnecock, Koepka won at one over. It's the last time a major was won by someone who was over par. And McMillan wrote that they're aware of that, and they're not going to do that again. Like,
right.
They're making the course easier.
Right. I've read that as well.
So that same tournament, Tommy Fleetwood shot 7 under one round, even when the winner was over par for the week.
Wow. All right.
So whatever that is, if par is 72, that's 65. Somebody's got to go 64.
This has got me rethinking. You know, I had so much success with the Masters with the 2 out of 4 guys to finish a round. This was like on the Saturday, I think, of the Masters I did this. 2 out of 4 guys. It was Rory, Scotty, Lowry, and someone else. Rose, I think, were the four.
And you won on this.
2 of the 4 to have a bogey-free round. And I was thinking, and I won almost $2,000, I think, on a $20 bet on that because 2 of them hit. And it was a lot of fun watching, I think it was Rose, finish up. Like, okay, he's almost there, right? I was thinking, if I find that, which I would guess I will, for this tournament, that I wouldn't want to do it because it's the U.S. Open. Like it might be a lot to ask.
That'll be baked in the price.
But, okay. But now with what you're saying about what they're doing to the setup, like maybe I'll throw a nickel or two on that just for fun because it was such a fun bet.
Bulldog, listen, fairways and greens. Simple as that, right? You play golf.
Yeah.
As simple as that.
Yeah.
Hit it in the fairway, then hit it on the green. What could go wrong? Matt Collar had a funny tweet. He'll be on tomorrow.
I saw this.
Did you?
A par three, 240 or something.
At least.
Yeah. What do you do? Hit a hybrid 210 yards, chip it near the flag, but it'll roll off the back.
Yes.
Putt, scared, downhill.
Yes.
Leave it short, right down a four.
Just pick it up.
Right. Basically, that's it. Yeah.
252 yards. Hole number two at Shinnecock. Yeah.
I did see... I don't like to click on everything that crosses your face on social media sites like Facebook, for example. But I saw more than one version of a story. Maybe it was just one guy, and maybe different places picked it up. I don't know. Who knows how they aggregate and whatever they're doing on Facebook. But what a 10 handicap, which I'm a 10 handicap. I just played Shinnecock Hills. Here's how it went. And I was like, that's around like what my handicap is gonna go up this year. It already is.
What's the number? What do you shoot?
I never got to the guts of the
open
story.
Like setup.
Yeah, I think like
that's,
within
you
the
shoot
last
100.
Within the last couple of weeks. Yeah, that's what I'm expecting, like to be in the 100s would be. But I never found. If anybody knows out there, hit me up. I never clicked on it because it was one of the stories in the comments. And like I don't know, just what am I opening myself up to?
Never go online.
I didn't trust it, so I didn't do
just
it.
Just never go online.
But it was one of the few things that I was like, oh, I would actually really like to read this, but I don't want to click on it.
I would guess that a 10 at an open golf course with the open setup would shoot at least in the 90s. I mean, most of the time.
Yeah.
First look, I would think that
90
is a great score.
95, I think, is a great score.
Okay.
Right? Yeah, that's what I think. Even for a 10 handicap with that setup.
Have you played an open course in your life, Oak Hill?
I played Oak Hill after the PGA. And I shot
right after.
Yeah,
like so it was set up
the week after.
Oh, that's good. I didn't do that.
And I shot like 101 or something.
I
wasn't anywhere near as competent as I am now. I think I'm a much better player now than I was then. But
you used to be the big uneasy.
Yeah, right. That's it.
I don't remember what I shot at Oak Hill, and I'm sure I didn't take it that seriously. It was more just a privilege to be out there through different guests and. Even a couple, mostly it was people I didn't really know when I was playing there. It was a long time ago. When I lived in Rochester is when I last played Oak Hill. But I'll never forget that 18th green moment when a guy in my foursome who was doing a lot of the usual nonsense.
Oh, right. Okay.
Just sort of chipping the ball. The ball's right behind a tree. Just sort of chips it over here.
Foot wedge.
Picking up 5-footers.
Right.
At Oak Hill.
Right.
Which you're going to make about 50% of the time,
right.
I would say.
Yeah, right.
And I can still see it. I was on the left side of that green. Maybe there's like a parking lot up beyond it. And the clubhouse is up to the left. And this guy had like, I don't know, a 50-footer. He had some long putt. Nobody's really, there's no game.
Right.
There's no match. There's no anything. It's just, we're just playing the golf course. And this guy putts it, lags it up there to like, I don't know, 8 feet, picks it up. 8 feet, picks it up. It's like, 89!
Ha!
The best. I did it! You did what? Tell me what you did. You did what?
By your...
You said 89 out loud? Is that what you did?
Questionable.
Because there's no way you shot 89.
Process, you are giving yourself an 89. So, you know, take that home with you.
This was a guy who was friends of the guy that invited me, and I wasn't there to get in anybody's face.
Right.
But, you know, just... That's something you guys can use this. When you go out, next time you're out playing golf and it's very casual and nobody's really that good, just whatever happens... When you finish, just yell 89.
Yeah, right.
Nobody even has to know what it means.
Or if you're trying to break 80, so yell out 79. Whatever. Do whatever you want.
That's a different... 79 is no joke. You'd better count everything if you're going to claim 79. 89 is more... I guess I just did that. Good for me. Look at me.
I still haven't gotten into the 70s yet this year. I just haven't dug in. I'm not doing the work, Mike.
No, apparently.
No. I hate the work. I don't really enjoy the work. I like the playing. I like the walking around playing. I like my friends. I like, that's it.
I don't. know, well, who am I to say? This is you, but I don't know that the work is that necessary if you're playing a lot already.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's its own work.
Yeah.
To that, play a lot, and that, you're just not playing a lot.
That's right. Because I very rarely have done the work through these 5 years that I've been playing, but I was playing like three times a week for the last couple of years, and I'm nowhere near that. I don't even have 10 rounds yet, and we're past the middle of June.
Yeah, it's summer.
Yeah, yeah.
So, why not?
I just haven't. I don't know. I've been in a different routine. The workouts and the bike and the Roswell rides next Saturday, and I just wanted to get right for that. So I have been concentrating on that and not even giving myself the leeway to say like, oh, well, it's going to be nice Wednesday morning. I'll go play golf instead. I've been just grinding, really. Hmm. So I'm doing a different kind of work.
You're watching four World Cup games in a row?
I guess that was Monday. That's right. I could have played golf Monday afternoon.
Probably could have.
But
you didn't have to work.
I was too busy watching the golf or the soccer, excuse me.
Brian Koziol joins us at 6 today. We'll talk more about the Open then. And Bulldog has his pick 10, and he's already done. Although he has to figure out what to do with Brooks Koepka's hand injury. Which hand? Does that matter? Which hand is more important in golf?
I feel like the
top hand?
I don't know.
I think top hand would
be. But either one being worrisome would be a problem.
I think if I had I think top hand, for me, left hand as a right-handed player would be worse. Because you need some...
I think that's probably right.
You know, you need a solid grip there.
Yeah.
And if your hand is broken or something, then
yeah.
I think that'd be tougher. Who was wearing gloves on two hands? Was that the...
Aaron Rye.
The winner of the PGA had gloves on both hands. That's right. I'm glad you knew that.
Both hands, yep.
Is that catching... You don't know. You're not out there. Is that catching on? You don't know. You're not out there enough.
I have not seen anyone in my experience these 5 years where I've been playing all this golf wearing gloves on both hands.
It's one more thing you'd have to buy.
That's right.
A second glove. We will talk to Jeremy Kahn, some AFC talk with the Baltimore host coming up in about 20 minutes. Bills and Ravens midseason this year. New coach there too. Sal Capaccio, Brian Koziol as well today. Mike Schopen, the Bulldog, here at 803-0550. This is WGR.